Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome David Richter to the broadcast. Since October of 2008, David has been the Vice President of IT Services Infrastructure Solutions at Kimberly-Clark. From July 2007 through August 2008, David was the Vice President of IT Operations and Infrastructure at Starwood Hotels. From March of 2002 through June of 2007, David served as the Vice President of IT Operations and Infrastructure and Operations Transformation at Harrah's Entertainment. Prior to David's time with Harrah's, David held a variety of roles at NEC Electronics, ending his time there as a director of IT. David has a PhD in Engineering and Technology Management from North Central University, an MBA from Humboldt State University, an MS in Computer Science with honors from California State University, Chico, and a BA in Computer Science and Mathematics with honors from the University of California, Berkeley. I recently spoke with David in Connecticut. Due to David's depth of knowledge in IT infrastructure, we chose to focus the bulk of our discussion on the second principle of world-class IT, which is infrastructure. David, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Well, Peter, thank you very much for the invitation and allowing me to participate.
Very good. You've held a wide range of IT roles in your career, David, and in your two most recent positions with Starwood and with Harrah's, you were the head of rather substantial infrastructure areas. And I thought we'd begin there. Infrastructure, obviously, is one of those areas that a lot of organizations are contemplating outsourcing. And I know that you have some thoughts on that run sort of against the grain of so-called conventional wisdom. And I wonder if you could explain some of your own thought processes around whether infrastructure can be a source of competitive advantage and how organizations ought to think about that.
Well, I think the starting point that most people really should use is really the requirements of the business. And it can be outsourced and can be outsourced very well, but organizations still need to be careful about true cost effectiveness, because oftentimes you're not going to save money by outsourcing infrastructure, and also your effectiveness in being agile and flexible. One of the things that outsourced companies do a very good job with are stable environments. But if you're in a high growth environment or need a lot of flexibility, it can be much more difficult to accomplish to the company's advantage. And to me, one of the classic examples I've seen at a number of organizations is with virtualization. Many organizations now are virtualizing their infrastructure, but if you take a look at their outsourcing contracts, there's very little advantage to do so. Said another way, many of the outsourcing deals I have seen, there is no actual advantage to virtualize because the outsource companies treat each virtual instance pretty much the same, if not exactly the same, as they do a physical instance. So that can actually limit an organization's ability to drive costs out of your infrastructure with virtualization and limit your flexibility. The flip side of that, too, is some organizations actually have made infrastructure strategic and is a strategic part of their business, part of their competitive advantage. Examples would be Google, Amazon, UPS, eBay, Yahoo, FedEx. These are organizations that without that infrastructure, they wouldn't exist, or certainly wouldn't exist in the form that they exist today. And that infrastructure itself enables their business and enables them to grow, enables them to change. And also, because of the infrastructure, there really are barriers to entry from competitors. Mm-hmm. Because for a competitor to really duplicate that infrastructure would be extremely difficult to do.
That's a very interesting point, David, and it's actually one that we've begun to hear some of our clients clamor about as well. I suppose part of what you're saying is, or a corollary to what you're saying perhaps, is that if an outsourced vendor is to manage your infrastructure for you, they don't know everything about your business that you do, and moreover, they don't necessarily have the incentives, nor do they have the time, or even potentially the wherewithal to completely differentiate your infrastructure from all the other infrastructure that they're managing.
I would agree. In fact, that's not their sweet spot.
Exactly.
Their sweet spot as an outsourcer is to do the kind of cookie cutter to the extent possible, plain vanilla. If the outsourcer has to do something unique for you and your organization, they certainly can do that, mm-hmm. perhaps as well, but perhaps not as well as you can do it yourself, and unlikely it's going to cost you any less money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if what you have is truly a vanilla type infrastructure, vanilla type business requirement, that could fit in the same mold as dozens of other companies, mm-hmm. yes, it could definitely be advantage there.
Yes.
But if it's something where you need flexibility, change, and I will also throw in high growth. If your organization is truly growing at a very rapid rate, I have found it's much more difficult for outsourcing organizations to adapt quickly enough to that.
That's interesting. And I even as I hear you say that, and certainly as I heard you tick off the names of the sorts of companies who have thought about infrastructure creatively and in fact use it as a source of competitive advantage, it strikes me that there isn't a common denominator necessarily industry-wise in terms of the sorts of companies who might seek some sort of advantage through their infrastructure. Is that fair?
I think that's fair, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, very interesting. One of the ways in which we like to think of infrastructure is as sort of the main determinant as to whether or not an organization is proactive or reactive. And I think what lies behind that is those organizations that don't have systems and hardware that are doing what they're supposed to be doing, that are not up and running, mean that the organization almost necessarily is going to be in some sort of ongoing firefighting mode. And I know that from the work that you've done, that you've helped organizations who've had issues in this way grapple with this and in fact create rather reliable infrastructure environments. And I'm wondering, for CIOs and heads of infrastructure who might just be at the beginning of that sort of a transformation, if you have any suggestions, what sorts of steps they might go through, or if there's any kind of typical playbook that you would offer in terms of grappling with those kinds of issues.
Well, yeah, first of all, but I'll provide maybe a little bit of background because every situation truly is different.
Mm-hmm.
And you are correct. If the organization is continually fighting so-called infrastructure fires, it's much more of a challenge to really deploy strategic systems. The challenge is that oftentimes if your platforms are not up and running, your network is not reliable, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
it's rarely just a matter of the network and the platforms. Typically, you have a relatively immature IT organization generally. What I mean by that is basically the processes are not efficient. What I have found, for example, if you have very poor uptime in your infrastructure, oftentimes your change management processes are not adequate, problem management, incident management, root cause analysis,
mm-hmm.
Et cetera. Basically, it typically requires improvement across a very broad spectrum of IT activities, not just the platforms or not just the network mm-hmm. Per se. The approach I've used is really pretty straightforward and pragmatic. And that's really to identify the issues, develop the classic Pareto, is rank your issues based upon business impact and focus at all times on the top 3 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And use the metaphor of pounding the tall nails. I mean, you keep pounding the tall nails, and over time, you're going to work your way through the list. And at some point, and it may take months, at some point, you're going to reach a tipping point where the accumulation of all the improvements that are made suddenly visibly become translated into higher uptime. Very rarely have I seen, in fact, I'll be straightforward about this, I have never seen a situation where there was one, two, or even three things. If we fix just those things,
right,
suddenly we're going to have a dramatic improvement in uptime. It typically is dozens, in some cases, hundreds of things that need to be done. The best way I found to manage that is basically make sure you're aware of what they are, prioritize them, and work through them. Now, I'm going to put one caveat in there, is that as you go through this, you do need to keep an eye out for a game changer, something completely different that's going to change the dynamic. And I don't know if this is a good example or not, but say, for example, you have some old platforms in running an error-prone Tier 1 data center.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going through and trying to fix all of those, it may make more sense to start looking at putting new technology into a Tier 3 or Tier 4 data center.
I see.
And phase the old stuff out rather than, we've got to upgrade our servers, we've got to fix this UPS, so we've got to add this much energy and HVAC instead of marching through it kind of blindly. Keep your eyes open for those things that, could be game changers and knock off a number of the items in one fell swoop, for lack of a better term.
That's very interesting, and I this actually is I think in some ways a nice segue to one of the areas that I was also hoping to cover with you, and that is the decision to invest in new systems and retire old systems, and that kind of old balance, oftentimes a difficult balance that organizations go through. And I guess related to that is the fact that infrastructure is so often reacting is the wrong word, because obviously if infrastructure is run well, it's part sitting at the table when the decisions are being made for new development and for new systems installations and so forth. But I wonder how you have approached things when new systems are arising, when new ideas for new systems come up, when new infrastructure is being put in place. How then do you balance that bringing in the new and letting go of the old?
Well, I'll go back to what the business requirements are. And actually, this is one of the things I found where organizations end up with layers upon layers upon layers of old legacy that
Exactly.
they've never actually retired, is no one has really sat down and looked at it from the business standpoint. What are the most effective use of those dollars? What is the strategy of the business? If you really take a look at the business requirements and the use of the dollars, that helps drive the right answer, for lack of a better term. And oftentimes that right answer is actually getting rid of or retiring the old infrastructure.
Yes.
I think one of the common areas that I've seen it numerous times, I'm sure other people have as well, is simply a new system comes in, the old infrastructure is not retired, and that cost structure is simply perpetuated
Exactly.
going forward without a real business decision. And that ultimately is going to get you into trouble, because that cost keeps getting layered in and layered in and layered in, and up at some point, you're no longer going to be a cost-effective infrastructure organization. So really driven by the business, and that's where I can't emphasize that enough. If you're making decisions for IT, and particularly IT infrastructure, based upon the business requirements and the use of funds and running it as a business, you'll typically drive to the right answer.
That makes a lot of sense, David. I, as I'm listening to you talk, and as I reflect upon some of the situations we've worked with in recently with organizations where they've had in these infrastructure issues, and infrastructure is really in some ways the part of IT that is less accessible sometimes to the business if it's not explained well. And one of the issues that we found sometimes is that organizations haven't taken the time to develop that infrastructure roadmap to really truly understand what are all the things that are hidden in the closets, what are those systems that have been around for years that we're still paying for, perhaps, that are redundant to things that should have replaced them when they were instituted and so forth. Do you agree that that's an important starting point, an important building block for that
I do,
conversation?
and I'm going to add another concept in here, which is truly important. That is transparency.
Great point.
It is not uncommon for an infrastructure organization to be to lack transparency to the rest of the business.
Yes.
Here's what we do. Here's how much it costs. Here's why it costs this much. And being able to break that down and lay it out to whatever level of the business, all the way to the board of directors.
Yes.
That doesn't happen very often. Typically, what you see is in an IT organization that infrastructure is going to be roughly 50% of the cost. And in a lot of organizations, it's simply a black box.
Yes.
We know you do a lot, but, and it costs a lot, but the lack of transparency, I think hinders really having a more robust, flexible, proactive infrastructure. And again, if you tie the roadmap to the directly to the plans of the business, you're probably going to come out okay.
With the prominence of software as a service, this certainly seems to be an area that's gaining a lot of attention and a lot of ground. And I know that a lot of large organizations, as they're thinking about engaging vendors, are attracted to the software as a service model. I wonder if you can comment on how that impacts infrastructure. At first blush, it seems like something that should be a simplifier. Is that your perspective?
Well, I look at it slightly differently. It is certainly one of the many options we have.
Okay.
It is a viable option, and in some cases, it can simplify things, particularly if it is self-contained. I've seen self-contained systems where software as a service, absolutely the best way to go about doing it. However, if that software oftentimes has to be integrated into existing systems in an organization, it can drive your complexity by a factor of 10. I mean, it can be incredibly more complex taking this one software service and then integrating it into all the other systems in your business if you need to. So
yes.
That's really, I found, the primary determinant of whether it's easy or not. If it's self-contained, it can make a lot of business sense and be very, very easy to execute. If it must be integrated, it can actually be more difficult to integrate and to execute.
Very interesting. I'd like to move on, if we can, to the topic of business continuity and disaster recovery. Now, you've worked in all of your recent experiences, you've worked at companies who are savvy users of information technology. And as a result, that means the IT departments were contributing really robust and value-added technology to the business, in some cases actually technology that was enhancing revenues for the organization and creating true value. And I know that we found in some organizations that are like those, it can be sometimes difficult to make the argument for investments, appropriate investments, I might add, in business continuity and disaster recovery, since I think the analogy works. It's a bit like life insurance. It's all about risk avoidance. It's not a value you're going to realize today. It's making sure that you're not opening yourself up to a risk that may or may not come tomorrow. And I'm wondering how you have how you face this challenge, how you have represented this appropriately to IT and ultimately to the business community to make sure that it's given its due.
Well, the key thing is getting the decision at the right level, I found.
Okay.
If you talk to your user, I mean, even maybe a senior vice president of business division, yes, I've got to have everything up and running 100% of the time, 10-minute failover, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
What I have found, the place to start is with the board of directors and the CEO.
Okay.
And the question really is, you know, what level of risk can the company tolerate? And that's a decision that needs to be made at the CEO and board of directors level.
Yes.
And if they say, well, you know, we can tolerate, and I've seen this, where, you know, we can tolerate 12 hours of downtime.
Mm-hmm.
That really is that business decision. That then drives everything from there, your investment, how you architect it, how do you approach it. And if that board of directors and CEO says, you know what, we can only tolerate, you know, I'm thinking of like the Yahoos and the Googles of the world,
yes,
we can only tolerate 5 minutes downtime a year, that's their level of risk avoidance.
Yes.
Then you architect and deploy accordingly. And the cost of doing that based upon the level of risk avoidance becomes a non-issue.
Yes.
You're not fighting about the dollar. We need this in order to do that. No, here's your level of risk that the company is willing to take on, and that's what we do with any insurance policy.
Yes, exactly.
You make it okay. I'll pay for the small ones, but I want that really big liability out there to be covered for me.
Exactly.
We all make those kinds of risk decisions.
Yes.
If you make the decision that way, The discussion changes. It's less about the dollars and selling the dollars and selling what you need to do. It's really implementing the decision for risk avoidance or risk tolerance, I should say, by the board and the CEO.
That's very interesting. You know, David, as I hear you talk about all these different topics that we've covered thus far, I'm struck by the degree to which you're talking about transparency, about engaging the business, about, in this case, in fact, engaging the board of directors and the heads of the business. As I mentioned a moment ago, infrastructure is really one of those areas that is uniquely owned by IT, and in some cases it includes a lot of terms and topics and categories that are less familiar to the business. And I wonder what approaches have you used to make infrastructure more accessible to your business partners? Since, in fact, as I say, this is one of those areas that may be a completely different set of language and tools than they're familiar with typically.
Very good question, and part of it is coming to a common language. And I discovered this a long time ago. There is one common language that everyone indeed understands. And as simplistic as the sound, it's dollars. Everyone understands money.
Yes.
And I have found that if you can put the information in terms that is understandable to that particular audience, to an audience of a CEO, to an audience of board of directors, et cetera, it's ultimately going to be dollars, benefit, profit, revenue, risk avoidance or risk tolerance, et cetera. So it's in in terms of things that they can understand. Now, one of the real advantages we have is that many folks, in fact, most organizations now at very high levels, do have an understanding of IT and an understanding of IT infrastructure.
Yes.
That wasn't the case 20 years ago, certainly. But, when you talk about disaster recovery, now people understand it, they get it. It is still a failing, though, of a lot of IT folks in that they will focus on talking about IT terms and things from their perspective versus thinking of the audience and talking in terms of their perspective.
Okay.
And I guess that's the starting point. But the second thing, like I say, is speaking in terms of dollars and terms that people can understand.
That makes a lot of sense. I'd like to switch gears now to people. I know we've discussed in the past that one of the conundrums, really, for one of the issues that infrastructure executives have is the good works of their team sometimes aren't as easily recognizable as, say, the development side of the house, where there is a project that has been dreamed up, it has a deadline, the deadline's reached, it ends up doing what it's supposed to do, and there's the obvious need then for the celebration and the pats on the back. Whereas infrastructure has the issue of if it's doing what its job and it's doing things well, it means that perhaps nothing is happening. It's actually that there are no fires that are starting. There's no reason necessarily to notice them. And I wonder how you have motivated your troops in that way, or is it a special type of person who chooses to join the infrastructure and thrive within an infrastructure environment?
Well, maybe a little bit of both.
Okay.
Certainly, I've been in situations where there have been a lot of fires in the infrastructure, and I've actually come across folks that kind of thrive and get their rewards out of being the firefighter and being able to go and rescue things time and time again. If you're really going to fix the infrastructure, sometimes those folks have a tough time transitioning over to really that day-to-day running it well and having the pride in uptime, being able to measure that, being able to measure and communicate the number of issues that we have that didn't result in business impact. It does take a little bit of a different mindset, and you really have to pay attention to it to reward and recognize people very, very regularly, because you're right. A lot of development projects, they're huge, there are a lot of visibility, they're typically require certainly CEO approval, sometimes board approval.
Right.
And when these gigantic projects come in and everyone, has a sigh of relief and the big celebration, those are great things to do. But if for a full IT organization, you've got that day-to-day excellence that's going on behind the scenes, does take a particular type of person that likes doing that and takes pride in doing that. But from a leadership standpoint, you do have to recognize it. And you do have to communicate it. It goes back to the transparency and being able to recognize the great things that people do in infrastructure. And it may not be as dramatic as once or twice a year for a major project, but it may be every week someone does something very, very substantive to improve uptime, to reduce costs, to improve customer service, and you recognize that.
That's great. And you allude, David, there to the sort of hero factor. And I know that you've discussed in the past that there are organizations that in some ways reward those heroes, and perhaps justly so, but in so doing create a culture where fires continue to burn, because that's the way in which the infrastructure can thrive and the way in which people, in fact, do get recognized. Is that an issue that you see as one that needs to be appropriately handled?
In the answer to questions, yes, because I have seen it exist, and it does exist in organizations. In fact, I'm reminded of an old Dilbert cartoon where the manager says, "I'll reward everyone $25 for every software bug they find," and then the person sitting there going, "I'm going to have a minivan by noon," because they're writing software bugs that they can then go find.
Exactly.
So you have to, it's good to reward things for the right reasons. And, when you do have an all hands and people work the all nighters and the weekends and everything else to fix major projects or major problems, certainly you want to reward that and acknowledge that and in an appropriate way, whether it be, recognition or gift cards or extra time off, etc.
Yes.
Where you get into the problem is where that becomes the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And the objective is to really get it into a stable operation and reward the stable operation.
Yes.
You know, reward things running well. And it takes a conscious effort.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be careful because in infrastructure, oftentimes, you've got a lot of folks that are doing their part every single day, day in and day out, like you say, somewhat invisibly to
yes.
the rest of the organization.
Yes.
And then when something breaks, then you have a handful of heroes
yes.
sometimes.
Yes.
But if things are going well and mature and as they should be, when those things break, typically you've got the entire team out there that's
yes.
the hero.
Yes.
So that you, if you have a situation where you have individuals being heroes time and time and time again, that may be a little bit of a flag that you, we have something here we need to go fix.
Good point. Good point. You mentioned close to the outset of our interview that there's some organizations, and you named a few, to include Google and Yahoo and UPS, who really do think of infrastructure as a strategic weapon and a source of competitive advantage. I wonder, as you think about those companies and others who are doing this so well, if there are other lessons we've not yet alluded to or covered that organizations who have the goal in mind of thinking about infrastructure more creatively and more as a strategic weapon, what they might learn from those organizations?
What I have found working with a number of these organizations somewhat intimately is they treat it as a business. It's not just infrastructure, but infrastructure and IT generally is treated as a business and an integral part of the business.
Yes.
If IT is something just separate, it's a thing we got to do, it costs us X number of dollars, and it's really not integrated in the business or the main event of the business, the IT may not be as successful satisfying the business requirements. And that takes something from both the business side and IT side.
Yes.
Because it's not a natural act sometimes for the business to look at IT as a strategic piece, and certainly from IT, historically it has not been a natural act to really look at what we do in IT as a business in and of itself and part of a larger business.
David Richter, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us today and for sharing your thoughts.
Well, Peter, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity and always good talking with you.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. This forum has been created so that we might have a series of discussions with a variety of IT leaders to understand, evaluate, and define world-class performance as it relates to MetaStrategy's five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it's nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in a reactive mode, constantly fighting fires. If systems and hardware work reliably, on the other hand, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It's important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important first and foremost that the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and quality assurance, through to support and all the other aspects of the IT department, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important then that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business. If the three prior principles, namely people, infrastructure, and project and portfolio management, are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial aspect to corporations, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, or please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. Thank you.